All right, guys, so it is the beginning of our next unit. In this unit, we're going to be talking about all of the spheres of Earth. So this is the start of that, and it should be a refresher. Why? Because we're talking about the sphere that most people know the most about, what you might call the geosphere. The lithosphere is part of it. So we're talking about things like tectonic plates, earthquakes, plate tectonics, like how it happens, why they move, different layers of the Earth, all of that very solid subject. So hopefully you enjoy this subject. Hopefully it is a refresher, and hopefully you remember a lot of this stuff from your previous years of school. So like I was saying, this could be called the unit of spheres. In terms of when you hear people break it down, like, and say anything about like lithosphere, hydrosphere, it says atmosphere, biosphere, like those are all some that you probably heard before. So with those ones, just know that like those are the main ones, but there's different ways that we could break it down. You'll hear that a lot. Sphere just means we're basically talking about a part or a major system of Earth. Okay, that's the easiest way to think about it. So today, we're going to keep it real simple. We're not talking about a lot of these. We're talking about like lithosphere. Lithosphere would be like, you could also call it maybe the geosphere. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. So we're talking about plate tectonics. We're talking about rocks. We're talking about parts of the Earth, mainly the solid, or at one point they were, at one point they're going to be solid pieces of Earth. Okay, so this is one key thing that I want you to think about, and I'll actually reference a question that an earth science student, great question that an earth science student asked me recently. So this earth science student said, because we're talking about gravity, right? And this kid did a great job of understanding that there was a connection or a correlation between mass and gravity. And he understood that if you increase mass, you increase gravity. If you decrease mass, you decrease gravity. So his question was this. His question was, so Campbell, as we get more people, as the population goes up and we make more stuff and we do all this, is Earth's gravity going to increase? And so his argument was, the mass of people, of human beings, is increasing, which is true. If the population goes up, then the mass of people does increase. But here's the thing, and it goes exactly with what it says in the top, at the top here, where it says the availability of Earth's resources was determined when the planet formed. So what I'm saying here is this, that even if the population triples, even if we go to 21 billion people, the mass, the total mass of Earth does not increase. And this is why population is so important. Because no matter what, the amount of stuff on Earth and the amount of resources on Earth is the same. Okay, so the mass doesn't change, it just gets moved around. Okay, so if there's more people, that means whatever they're made of came from where? It came from Earth. Okay, and where did that stuff come from? Well, it came from the solar system billions of years ago, and that's what we're looking at. Okay. So, but this is the key thing. One second, guys. All right, so the key thing is the bullet point there, because you maybe have wondered, I'm sure you know this to an extent, like, well, why is, if the United States is so young compared to so many other countries, why is it so powerful? Like, so many of these other countries have been around for so much longer. Why don't they have more wealth and more power than the United States? Well, it's because the resources that we hold valuable are not evenly distributed. So, like, some countries in the Middle East, like, Middle East-ish, are very wealthy because, like, take a country like Saudi Arabia. Like, they are insanely wealthy because of oil, a resource that a lot of other people don't have, so they control it, so they make money. So same thing with the United States. We have a lot of things that other people really care about, so made us a lot of money. You could take where we live in the Central Valley. Why would there be, Like some of you guys might say, well, why would there be a city like Modesto? Why would this city exist? Well, look around you. Look at all the agriculture around you. Our soil is something crazy. It's good. Really, it's awesome. What's even better than that is the climate that we have here. Allows us for some crops, multiple growing seasons, which you can't do other places, right? I forget what the exact number is. I believe it's somewhere in the 90% of all almonds are grown in the Central Valley of California. So that really helps our economy. Okay, so things like that. Don't think not so much the culture, the resources. Okay, but what we're going to talk about now is kind of the non-agriculture resources. Okay, the rock, the stuff that's in the ground. Where does that stuff come from? Okay. So we're going to talk about some layers of the earth right here. So we have one layer of the earth, which is known as the core. Think of it like an apple. It's the middle. Okay. It says 3,000 kilometers down. I'll give you a comparison of what that is in a second. I've got a really good visual that's going to help you understand how far it is to the center of the earth. Okay. You guys probably all know this, but, not many of us showed it last week. So the core is made from mainly the most dense elements. Why? Because the most dense things sink. Where do they sink? They sink to the middle of the earth, okay? Because the earth at one point was liquid. So if it's liquid, they sink. The more dense things go to the bottom. The bottom for the earth is the center. So that's where we end up with our iron and our nickel. That is actually extremely important. Most people don't know this, but that's extremely important because the solid metal that's in there actually gives us, it rotating creates our magnetosphere. Our magnetosphere, if you don't know what that is, another one of the spheres, right? Magnetosphere is kind of like if you think of like Star Wars, Star Trek, these movies where they have spaceships and they have these like invisible shields, like our shields are at 20%. Our magnetosphere is like our shield for Earth. Another layer of Earth that we have is the mantle, which is actually the largest layer of Earth. Mainly, like a lot of people say liquid. It's not really. Kind of is, but it's not really. So we'll talk about it a little bit more in a second. But it is magma, so it's melted rock. But it's more of like a nacho cheese consistency. We also have the asthenosphere. The asthenosphere is kind of like a transitional layer. It is the, some people say, the uppermost part of the mantle. It's, or the lower part of the lithosphere. It's like a transition. So here, you're really not looking at liquid, and you're really not looking at solid. Think of like bubblegum rock, like that kind of consistency where it's like, that's a great description of it, right? Then we have the top layer, the crust, the lithosphere. That's what we are on right now, the lithosphere, okay? Also, the bottom of the ocean is the lithosphere. So all of the solid outer part is what we are talking about. Okay, boom. Okay, so then where did this all come from? And I've got to give you guys like the quick version of this, right? The quick version is this slide. So if you guys didn't know, like I'm going to tell you something crazy real quick. So all stars form in what's called a stellar nebula. A stellar nebula is just a cloud of gas and dust in space. Where did a stellar nebula come from? Well, a dead star. So a dead star forms a new star. But yeah, this cloud of gas and dust is floating around in space. Eventually, enough of it kind of just randomly collects together. And when you have mass, you have gravity. So if it collects together, guess what you're increasing? You're increasing the mass, which then increases the gravity. Okay? So if you increase the mass, you increase the gravity. If you increase the mass, you increase the gravity. If you increase the mass, you increase the gravity. We call that a positive feedback loop. Okay? So that's what we're looking at, positive feedback loop. So you add, you add, you add, you add. So eventually, that collects together so much that it gets really, 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 really hot. Okay, you don't have all of it collected, but you have a decent amount of it collected. So you have enough collected though where you start to form a star. If it gets hot enough, about 5,000 and a half Kelvin, or yeah, 5,000 and a half Kelvin, which is really freaking hot, then you get fusion, so the star is created. But all this time, what's also happening is inside of, not inside, in the same area, there's other stuff that has been collected. Okay, most of it collected in the middle with where the most mass was, so we're creating the most gravity. But along the way, you have other things running into each other. So you have these other rock things forming, the planets. Okay? So they all just randomly collect and run into each other, and then as the sun forms, then it starts to become more organized and ordered. They more of them collect and run into each other, and then we have our actual solar system that forms in a certain order, but along that way, the Earth formed. At that time, it was not solid. It was a liquid rock. It was all just magma, but up to the surface. Maybe had like a really thin crust, but mostly liquidy rock. So then eventually, over millions of years, you do get an actual formation of a crust. And that's really key because couldn't have life without crust. Not many things live in liquid rock that's thousands of degrees. So this is what we actually have the form. Okay, so this is us like breaking it down. You have in the very middle, we have our solid inner core. Remember, that's iron and nickel. Then we have, and that's the most dense things, because remember, it's liquid. Where do the dense things go in liquid? They go to the bottom. Okay? So like imagine if you're throwing iron in the pool. Where is it gonna go? It's more dense, so it goes to the bottom. Oh, okay. Then you have your liquidy outer core. It is still your most dense metals, but they're not all solid. So it has a little bit of different components or characteristics. Then you have your largest layer, you have the mantle. And then it says crust just because that's really easy to remember, like a pizza crust, but we call that the lithosphere. Okay, the lithosphere is the crust, same thing. Okay, we already mentioned the asthenosphere. The asthenosphere is the top part of the mantle. And Lorenzo just said, has anybody ever gone through the crust? We've tried, but no. It gets too hot. Heat is the issue that we're battling there. And it's really thick, like on continents, because continents, you'd have to go through all of the ground and then another, it's like something like 120 kilometers or something that you'd have to go through the ground. So we've tried that in the bottom of the ocean. Can't do it. We do not have the technology to do it. Nor do we really, like, honestly, like, we don't so much want to. Like, we do want to, but we don't so much need to. There isn't much to be discovered by doing that. Okay, so this, I think, is a great visual. Because a lot of times we'll talk about it and we'll say, man, the Earth is a lot wider than you think. It takes a lot longer to get to the core than you think. But look at this visual, right? So we're looking at, on the left side, you would have, say, San Francisco. On the right side, you're going all the way up to like the farthest part of Maine, okay? So the width of the country diagonally is how thick it is just to get to the core. It's obviously twice that to get to the other side. But there you can see all of our layers. You can see the lithosphere, you can see the asthenosphere, the mantle, the outer core, and the inner core. So you can see a comparison of how big these layers actually are too. So pretty crazy. I don't know, I think that's cool. All right. But now, so over time, Earth has been changing and it's still continually changing, right? So there's a lot going on here. So there's three processes, one of which we're definitely going to talk about today. Okay, the main one that we're going to talk about today is number one, the tectonic cycle. So tectonic plates is what we're talking about. We will, in this unit, talk about two and three, but today our focus is the tectonic cycle and what's going on with that. Okay. So what you're looking at here is something like, and this I do, like, as somebody that obviously learns and knows some stuff about science, I don't understand why certain things stick. I've never understood it. I still don't. But one thing that sticks is if I show continents together, people always think Pangaea. But I think it was like six times that all of the continents have been touching. But Pangaea really sticks. I don't know why. But that is a relatively new thing. Like in terms of a few hundred years, this idea of the continents and the plates moving, the plates especially. So if you're wondering like, well, why did that become a thing? Well, because this image. This is one great example. Okay, I know some of you guys already know this, but there was this guy, Alfred Wegener, and he had this belief that the continents were connected. And one way that he helped prove this, because like initially he went with like the puzzle piece theory. He was like, well, they kind of look like they fit together, so they probably fit together. Okay, so great. Then he had to prove that. You can't just say something, you got to prove it. So his way of trying to prove it was looking at the rock. Okay, so the crazy thing is, if you look at, there's these mountains that are in like the northeast. Okay, so above the Appalachian Mountains, there's the Adirondack Mountains. The Adirondack Mountains are also the same rock, the same age rock, so that means they're from the same original mountain range of these mountains that are way up in northern Canada, that are in Greenland, that are in like Scandinavia. And that are in northeastern Europe. So it's all the same mountain range, right? So, how did the same exact mountain, same type of rock, same age form on basically four completely different land masses? How'd that happen? Well, maybe they eventually were together. So, see, we did the same thing with South America and Africa, okay? So, there's one major way that we figured that Alfred Wegener was trying to prove. Hey, these continents were together at one point. Another way that he did this, and like this is another thing. There were a bunch of animals, but like this was the one. The Mesosaurus was like the one animal where he said, this proves it, okay? So this was a freshwater animal. Think of like it's not, but think of like an alligator or crocodile, okay? They can't swim across oceans. They can't, like, alligators and crocodiles cannot just swim like a shark can for miles and miles and miles. So we found, or he found, or somebody found, but he used it. Alfred Wegener used it to help prove his theory. They found fossils in South America and Africa of this animal. Well, shoot, this animal can't swim across the Atlantic Ocean. So then, how the fossils get there? Maybe they used to be closer. Maybe the Atlantic Ocean used to be freshwater. So he used that. Actually, let me skip back. So he used that to prove the idea of continental drift. Okay, continental drift. Just so we're clear. Continental drift is actually what your parents or your grandparents might have learned in school. Okay? It's literally like continental drift is something they were still learning in, I think, like the 50s or the 60s. Like, think about it. That's not that long ago. 60 years ago, 70 years ago. That's crazy. So they were learning this, and what continental drift said was the continents moved. That was it. Like Africa would just. Right? That's what they thought. But then we're like, we knew something was wrong. So then we took that a step further, and now we have, and I'll explain why we took it so much further. But now we have this theory of plate tectonics. It's very similar. It's still saying everything's moving on top of the mantle, but not just the continents, that everything is. The crust, it's just different types of crust. Everything is a lithosphere, it's just different types of lithosphere. And it's all moving. So, like all of these stitches that you see are different tectonic plates. The reason why we're able to figure this out was one, well, two main things. Earthquake technology. So what I'm saying is, like, we can literally map where all these earthquakes are coming from. And so you could kind of use that to get a rough idea of where the plate boundaries were. Also, we used sonar. Like, literally, we have mapped what the bottom of the ocean looks like. So you can see that, like, I don't believe, I don't think I have it in here, but if you look at a sonar map of the bottom of the ocean, you can be like, oh, clearly, where it looks like a scar on somebody's body. You're like, well, clearly something happened on that person's arm. They got a cut at one point. Same thing with the Earth. You can tell, right? Because Earth works kind of the same way as us healing. Okay. So, but now why? Why do the plates move? Okay? I hope you're asking that. If you don't ask that enough in classes, then you're crazy, right? That to me is kind of a bummer. I don't think I get that question enough, right? I'm telling you guys, like, I gotta be honest with you, especially in earth science. I could seriously stand in front of class for an hour and make up everything and nobody would even ask. But no, I've really recently been pushing to ask the why. Why? Or how? How's this happening? Okay? 'Cause for me, it's not good enough. Like, I'm not good at my job if it's just like, well, no, there's plate tectonics, guys. See you later. What the heck? That's terrible. So let me explain how. Okay? So when you guys go to Costless, right? You go to Costless, and some of you guys might remember this analogy. Some of you guys might remember me drawing pictures on the board. Some of you guys might remember me showing you guys a really awesome video of Jim Carrey and a rhino. That's what we're talking about here. So what we're talking about here with the how they're moving is you go to Costless, right? You go to pay for your stuff. You don't just walk to the person and give it to them, do you? What do? You put it on this like black rubber belt. And what does that do? Well, that moves your stuff. How? Because the black rubber belt is actually not moving. Okay? Or it's not itself moving. Guess what's moving? The thing underneath. There's things underneath. There's these gears underneath the black rubber belt that go like this. They just go in circles. And then everything on top does what? Right? It probably doesn't make that noise. I don't know why I went with that noise, but it moves, right? That's the exact same thing that's happening with Earth. Okay? So, underneath your feet right now, those gears are spinning. It's this, right? So, there's these big circular currents because the mantle is kind of liquidy. Okay? It is a fluid, we should say. So, it's going like this. Right? So, if something's going like this, what's that going to do to the thing on top? You get what I'm saying here? But now I'm telling you guys, what I want you to do is always ask why or how. So now it's not good enough that I just say that, because just like that conveyor belt at the grocery store, it doesn't just happen. Well, how does it happen? There's a motor that is giving power through electricity to those gears, causing them to spin. Right? We don't need to dive deeper into that one because that's not the direction we're going. But why in Earth, in the mantle, is it doing this? Why? Does anybody know why? I'm going to actually ask you. Does anybody actually know why? Why this is happening? Anybody? No? Nobody knows. Nobody knows why this circular process, convection, is happening in the mantle? Nobody.
Isn't that just how heat travels? So, like, hot stuff goes up, and when it cools down, it goes down. It's just a cycle.
There we go. So what we're looking at, and I can see a bunch of you guys typing. I'll let you guys type. I'll let you guys type. I want to see if some other people are gonna answer here. We got like three people typing. Still waiting on people typing. I can see them typing. Okay. Well, I still see some people typing. Emily just typed. She's talking, comparing it to cooking. Okay. Okay. So, I'll help explain. So there's several, and we're not going to get into this today. We will throughout the year, but so what we're talking about is heat transfer. Okay. Heat in nature is always trying to equalize itself. Okay. If it's too hot, it's going to try to cool off. If it's too cold, it's going to try to warm up. Okay. So for heat transfer, hot things, and that's my analogy. Okay. In reality, nature's not thinking that way. It just happens, right? Because when you heat something up, when you heat a gas or a liquid up, things spread out. It wants to spread out. Just like you, when you're hot, you don't want anybody near you. You get away from me. I don't want you near me right now. It's too hot. So it's so hot, everything spreads out. So when it spreads out, it's that same word we used earlier, it becomes less dense. It's less dense, it goes up. So it goes up, and then when it goes up, it hits the top. It like bangs into the crust, right? But it's still moving along, moving along, moving along. But it's no longer close to the heat source because the core is basically the heat source, right? So when it gets so far from the heat source, it cools off, becomes more dense. Because what do you do when you're cold? You're like, ooh, I'm going to bundle up. Now I want you near me, right? Now, like, warm me up, right? So then it goes down. It's so dense that it starts going down. Okay, it's getting close to the core. What's the core going to do? Heats it up. The best example, this is the example that, like, I don't think there's a better example to use, is the thing that every, like, I feel like what, maybe like a 12-year-old kid wants for Christmas. I feel like at one point, everybody wants one of these, and it takes you 2 weeks to realize it was a waste of a gift. I'm talking about a lava lamp, okay? I had one, thought it was cool. Not cool. They're so boring. But they do teach you something about science because they have a light in there. They have a lamp. It heats up those blobs. When they heat up, they become less dense. They go up. They cool off. They become more dense. Huh. Convection. That's what we're talking about. Okay. Hot spots are this. Okay. Hot spots are when that convection, because that convection does this, right? It goes psh, 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 and like moves the crust around. Okay? So it moves these tectonic plates around. But sometimes you get so powerful of an upward drive that it burns a hole through the crust. So you have this a few places, the Galapagos, the Canary Islands, Iceland, Yellowstone, Hawaii. The list goes on. Rapa Nui. So there's a bunch of places where you have this, where the mantle, the magma has just driven through the crust. Okay. So moving on. Okay. There are some things here that, you know, let's go quick here. Okay. Two things that I want you to understand here. Seafloor spreading is when seafloor spreads. Divergent boundary, ripping apart, seafloor spreading. The main one that I want you to understand is subduction. What does sub mean? Anybody? Anybody, help me out. What does sub mean?
Hello.
Below, yes. So
Let's go.
sub means below. Like, I mean, what's a subway? It's a train system that goes below. What's a submarine, it goes below the ocean, sub-zero, the temperature's below zero. What is, bet you didn't know this one, what's a substitute? It's somebody who's below your teacher. Like, that's where that word actually comes from, the below. But subduction, so we know something's going below, okay? So we're talking about one tectonic plate going underneath the other, okay? Subduction is always with an oceanic plate going down underneath a continental plate. Why? Because the continental plates, like the stuff we stand on, land, the land plates, are less dense. Less dense wants to go up. The oceanic plates, the ocean plates, are more dense. So if two things run into each other, the more dense thing goes down. Subduction. Okay? So has to do with density, but understand that subduction goes with something going below. Just remember the word and you'll be okay. Okay, so volcanoes, we're not going to go too in-depth volcanoes. A lot of this should be refresher. Volcanoes are formed several different ways. Most of the time, I think of volcanoes like every teenager's favorite thing. A zit. So, how does a zit get popped? With pressure, okay? So, volcanoes, a lot of times it's the same thing. Most volcanoes are the same thing. They occur at tectonic boundaries or near tectonic boundaries. Actually, they typically occur, like you'd have subduction, right? Going under, they would typically, like, so if you're going underneath this plate, they would typically occur back here. So, like, maybe 100 miles inland from a subduction zone. The reason why is because when you're going underneath, all of this is being melted. All of this subducted plate is being melted and then forced upward, right? So then it gets forced up and out, right? So remember, it's like a zit. I'm trying to go kind of fast through some of this stuff. Okay, so now this is like the whole picture. And this is, I'm telling you here, if you want a quick refresher, if you're trying to study something for the AP test, and you're like, oh, I really need to go over my earth science side of the AP test. This image, this one image would be great. Because to me, it's like, hey, can you explain all of those things? Okay, so let's try. Let's start from the beginning or from the middle. Okay, so in the middle, we have convection. It's heat transfer, less dense, right? It's being heated up by the core. So, like, bottom center below this image would be the core. It's heating up the mantle. It's becoming less dense. It's going up. It's cooling off and dropping down and out. Okay. Then it's going to be heated up. So it's this continual cycle, just like that. Okay. As it goes up, it's moving the tectonic plate. So at the very top where you see the seafloor spreading, you have a divergent boundary. They're moving apart. And it's being ripped apart. Why? Because as this convection goes up, it's moving to the right and it's moving to the left, so that's kind of forcing everything apart. Okay, the oceanic crust is the bottom of the ocean. The asthenosphere is the uppermost part of the mantle. Subduction zone, remember, sub below, you have oceanic plate going under continental crust, right there. Continental crust is higher, so it's our land, is higher because it is less dense. You have a lower portion of the lithosphere, also known as the oceanic crust. Once again, subduction zone, sub going below. The rising magma is one, it's rising because it's being heated up. Two, it's rising because it's being pressed together, like toothpaste or like you going, right? Okay. Here's an example of a hot spot, Hawaii hot spot. We don't need to go too in depth with that. You'll be okay with that one. To be honest. So now let's go over some of these things that I've been throwing at you guys. And I'm going to try to go quick here. I want to finish in like no more than 10 minutes. Okay, types of plate contact. So divergent. Like, I don't know if I'm like, if it's like a natural thing that I'm good at, but like the thing that helps me is the words. when things diverge, they move away from. Like, I don't know. This movie might be kind of too old for you guys. It's like maybe 8 years old, something like that. Divergent, right? There's like a whole series of them. First one's all right. The other ones are really terrible. But Divergent, what is the movie about? The movie's about a girl that she, but Emily, can you tell me? So the first one's called Divergent, right? What is it about, though? What does the girl do? Help me out here. Wait. So what's the normal thing to do, Emily? Yeah, so a quick idea, like, I'm crazy, but, like, I watch way too many movies, so I've watched these movies. But let me tell you real quick, in Divergent, like, what the general idea is. So, like, there's these factions, right? And they, like, do this test, and, like, they're supposed to be a part of that faction. Like, the normal thing is, like, you just go where you're supposed to. The whole story here, the whole thing that gets the ball rolling here is... she doesn't do what's normal. She goes against or away from what's normal. What's it called? Divergent. Okay, so here's normal. Here's this girl. What is it? Shayla Woodley or whatever her real name is. She does this. Just like that. Right? So she's moving away. Yeah, it's like literally the same thing as Hunger Games. Come on, Emily. Emily, I'm sorry, but Hunger Games, Divergent, and Maze Runner are all the exact same thing. Okay. All right, and then our next one is Convergent. Wow, it sounds similar. What is it when two things converge? They move toward... if diverge is away, converge is together. Like, think of, like I personally, I like to break the word down. The first three letters. Like, think of, like, connect. Oh, you're putting things together. So, converge, things are coming together, okay? So, here is our example. You have two things running into each other. Piece of cake. This is, so, convergent, like I said, you do sometimes have, or you do have subduction at convergent boundaries with continental oceanic crust. Continental is less dense, so it goes up. Oceanic more dense goes down. Sometimes you do, like with the Himalaya mountain range, you have two continental plates that run into each other, and then you get these giant mountains that form because nobody wants to go be the one that goes down. They're both like relatively equal density. They run into each other and you get these giant mountains. Still convergent boundary because they're moving towards. Then you have where we live. You have where plates move alongside of each other. Okay? So divergent, they move apart. Think of like a cut, right? You get a cut. And divergent boundaries build land, you get new rock. Convergent boundaries destroy rock. Transform, they change, right? Transform, change. So transform boundaries move like this. They rub against each other. So you're not destroying the rock, you're just changing the way the rock looks. That's where we are. San Andreas Fault is along a transform plate boundary. So there you go, moving alongside of each other. So, at any of at any of these plate boundaries where you get the tectonic plates running into each other, moving past each other, moving under each other, away from each other, you have faults. A fault is just a break in the ground. If you have a break in the ground, you get earthquakes. Okay? There we have the San Andreas Fault, which is a long A transform boundary. Okay? It's literally that clear. Like, when you get up into space, you can see it. It's a straight line, but they're moving alongside of each other. They're moving like this. So, like, you'll hear people say, California's going to fall into the ocean. No, it's not. It's just going like this. Right? They're moving alongside of each other. So, no, it's not going to go into the ocean. That doesn't make sense. The Richter scale is how we measure earthquakes. I mean, you guys know that. Earthquakes, I don't think you need to go crazy into. From what I've seen, let's skip past some of this stuff. Okay. The rock cycle is something you do need to understand. The rock cycle is how all of this gets changed, right? So when something gets subducted, it goes into the mantle, it gets melted, becomes magma, eventually it comes back out, forms new rock, maybe that gets broken down, weathered, eroded, forms soil, sand, dirt, all of those things. That's actually a mineral, pyrite. I believe that is graphite. Gypsum. Okay. Okay, so we're going to go through this quickly. All right, so with how rocks form, and this is important when we start talking about soil. there's three different ways that rocks form. All rocks form from igneous initially. That has to be the beginning. Igneous formed directly from magma or lava. Okay, so in one way it came out of the ground or it came out of the volcano. Okay, that's igneous rocks. You have two kinds. You have igneous intrusive, so that formed in the ground, right? So it like is magma that got pushed up, cooled off, and then eventually the sand and dirt washed away and you have this rock left over. That would be like you go up by Yosemite and you see the large granite walls. That was intrusive. Granite is an intrusive rock. Extrusive means that it came out of a volcano. So it came out on the land. You actually see the orange, red, whatever, cools off, forms rock. Sedimentary rock is when any rock gets broken down. So like sand, if you compact it together, forms a new rock. Or sometimes through chemical processes, forms a new rock. That's sedimentary rock. Last one is metamorphic rock. Metamorphic rock is like when it gets changed. So metamorphic, like the metamorphic process, right? So if you take an igneous rock, you heat it up a little bit more, and you kind of mush it around, you get these rocks that have been changed. I have a really cool lab with this that maybe when you guys come back, we'll do. Hopefully you guys that were in my class years ago remember doing the Starburst lab. We did a Starburst lab that had to do with the rock cycle. So maybe you guys will get to do, no, you guys will definitely get to do that. That's not one I'm going to have you do at home, but when you're here, we'll do it. So yeah, I'm going to skip past this. Okay. This is the last topic and then we're done. I made it. Okay. So we have weathering and erosion. This is going to be like the key end to this section because one subject that we talk about and really have to understand is soil, okay? How does soil form? Soil forms through weathering and erosion. This is something a lot of people get wrong, okay? A lot of people use the word erosion when they should be using the word weathering. Weathering is the actual breaking down of rock, okay? So maybe you've gone to like a river and you've seen like the really round rocks. Well, how do they become round? Well, the water like washes over it, washes over it, washes over it. But where does the other parts of the rock go? It gets broken down. That's how sand forms, okay? Erosion is the moving of rock. The transportation of this sediment, okay? So There are several examples of this. We'll talk about more kind of when we talk about soil. But here are two different examples of weathering. So you have mechanical weathering and you have chemical weathering. A would be considered chemical weathering. So you're breaking the rock down through chemical means. So like if you have really acidic water and you're breaking down limestone, okay? So it's gonna weather the rock. The root of a tree breaking down a rock is a mechanical process. So like if a bird picks up a rock, drops the rock breaks, that's a mechanical process. Make sense? I know we're going over a lot. So, okay. Well, guys, that is our lesson for today. Hopefully, you learned a lot. If you have questions, you know where to send them. If you have comments or concerns, send them to the same place. Let me know if you have a way to make this podcast better. Let me know if there's a better way for me to help you. If you have any input for me, just send it my way. I'd love to hear it. Thanks, guys. See you next time.